Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Here's a little something about it like me. Never should have been let out the penitentiary. Ice Cube will like to say that I'm a crazy from around the way. Since I was a youth, I smoked.
Seven minutes after 12 noon, we're sitting high and dry above Madison Square Garden at our fantastic facility, brought to us by NJDiet.com. So that's pretty much a classic NWA song, vocals by Ice Cube there. And our friends Bernie and Sid just had a very dynamic conversation with Mr. Cube himself around 10 o'clock this morning. And they were addressing the issue of the N-word, particularly because, actually, my very first day here on the brand new Curtis and Ebony show, we addressed that issue. Bill Maher dropped the N-bomb on his program and met with a lot of controversy. So in response to that, Bill Maher brought Cube on his program, kind of got schooled about who can use the word, who can't use the word. So Curtis and I talked a lot about it. We had a guest on that was supposed to be on Bill Maher's show and felt like he couldn't go on because of the N-word. Now, Curtis, and I'm going to let him speak for himself in a minute, but he took issue with Cube being the messenger of policing around the N-word.
Well, first off, Sid Rosenberg and Bernard McGurk, they soft-served Ice Cube, Ice Trey, Ice, Vanilla Ice, whatever Ice he is at the moment, because they never once asked him, do you use the word?
Well, they kind of get into it. Well, let's play the clip, Curtis, before you start hating, as you typically do on this issue, and hear what Cube and Bernie and Sid talked about.
Well, you know, the thing is it is a word that we could do what we want with at this point. You know, the word was abused, you know, against us for the longest. So, you know, if we want to use it, I mean, you get people amongst each other calling each other all kind of stuff. You get women amongst each other calling each other the B. And it's fine. But if I say it, it's probably going to be a problem. So I think people just need to, like I said, check theyself or they wreck theyself. These kids want to get on a train and use it to death. That's their business. They want to blame rap music for prolonging the word. But the word was really invented way before rap music and used against us way before rap music. So, you know, to me, you know, that's where you start. You know, as far as our community, we'll figure that out. But that's really up to us to figure it out, just like every other community figures out the words that that they use.
What nonsense. What technology. Can you imagine this? First off, he says, if I use it, you know, it's going to cause a problem. Really? You've made a life of dropping the N-bomb.
No, he was saying the B word, Curtis. You got to listen to the brother. He was saying
me.
If he was a as a man, if he used the B word, that would cause a problem.
There's so many words because him and Jay-Z have been popping the B word, the N word, every other word, and they made millions of dollars on their way to the bank. Then he says if a bunch of young black kids on the subway want to drop the N-bomb or B-bomb on a regular basis, that's their thing. You know, that's for them to decide. It's for our community to make a determination on this, and I was waiting for Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg to say, but do you use the word now, privately and publicly? But naturally, you know, they wanted to back off because they wanted to give the brother his circumference, his room to operate when he has been the purveyor of the use of this word over and over again, like a machine gun, like a Gatling gun.
So here's the issue, though, Curtis. He said a couple things that stood out to me. If kids want to use this word to death on the bus, that's their business, and we'll figure it out himself. So this is what I'm suggesting, Curtis, and you tell me your thoughts. I think we need to have Cube on the Curtis and Ebony show because I think it's very easy for him to go on with Sid and Bernie and other white folks and basically politely say, mind your business, white people, on the issue, and that it's an internal issue that I think, quote, we'll figure it out. So I'm a part of the we. I'm a black woman in America from the South, no less. I would love to have this conversation with Ice Cube directly and personally, and not an attack, but a real, because I hate the word. I haven't used the word since I was a freshman in college, and primarily when I thought about why I would use the word, Curtis, it was because it was just floating around so freely, and it felt like just part of pop culture vernacular. And then when I thought about it more seriously, it just felt counterproductive. And so this notion of it's kids' business to do with it what they want, I reject it. I think words have power. I think that's why we are in positions as media professionals, whether that's us here on WABC, whether that's people on Fox News, where I go and do a program every evening, or whether that's in rap, movies, media. It all matters, Curtis. So I take issue with what Cube is defending himself with, but I'd like to have that conversation with Mr. Q personally.
Well, good. Bring him on in, because I'll melt him down with my blast furnace. Wait,
was that like some kind of like suave use of words there, because he's Cube, so you'd melt him? Is that what you're trying
to
do there?
Okay. Because he will melt.
Smart,
he will melt in my person, because right. I don't take that nonsense that he spews and other brothers spew on a regular basis about how we've owned the word, we've taken it back. You white boys can't use it now. You used it. You maligned it. You misused it. Well, how do you actually culturize it to make it a positive thing? I'd like to know how all of a sudden, when you're dropping that N-bomb, like so many people do on a regular basis, this suddenly adds a positive tinge to it. This puts ownership to it. This suddenly sort of rebirths it, resurrects it, and gives it new meaning, new charm, new ambiance. It's the same ugly word as was always used, and yet now you're using it against self, which means you must hate yourself.
Wait a minute, Curtis. Now, let me ask you something.
You must be a self-hater.
You just accurately described it as an ugly word. So then why do so many white people seek permission to use it?
Well, because they see so many brothers and sisters using
it
on a regular basis.
But it's ugly. So we all know it's ugly.
Yeah, but if the brother and sister is telling me, oh, no. We've co-opted it.
Oh, so you just want to use
it. We own it now because we're making it a positive thing.
So you're telling me some white people want to use it because they say they're told they can't? Is that what it is? It's like some weird passive-aggressive thing?
No,
you only want to use it because somebody
like
told you
else.
You cannot.
It's like everything culturally. If it becomes part of the vernacular, then everyone thinks that it's part of the flow. Mm-hmm. And if one person says it, another person can say it, and that there are no dividing lines. Let's open up our phone lines on that. As Ice Cube got soft-served earlier today by our colleagues,
Ice
Bernard
cream.
McGurk
soft
and Sid
serve.
Rosenberg.
I see what you're doing there.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. How much other propaganda did they let him spew without jumping
Look
his bones?
You. Well, they asked him, particularly, Curtis, about the use of the N-word in music.
Oh,
because
music.
A lot of people feel like that's a safe space for it. This is what Cube had to say.
Well, you know, I mean, music is music. And, you know, people like songs, people get into it. I don't think it's a problem with that. It's just when it's outside of music, when there's no songs playing and, you know, people feel like they can just toss that word around freely.
Now, I don't buy that only because I have a good friend of mine. He's an older white guy. He's got teenage sons, three of them. Obviously, they're white, too. And they use the N-word. This guy is a very educated, great person. And he says, well, Ebony, I don't know what to tell my three white teenage sons around not using the word because they hear it in the music. And I said, well, first of all, let him have 5 minutes with me. I'll set him straight because I don't give a dang on what Kanye, Cube, T, nobody else says.
You know,
it's a raggedy word and you shouldn't be using it anyway.
You know, let me flash back to the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles after that Simi Valley jury exonerated the four cops that gave Rodney King a beatdown. Ice Cube was in the forefront of calling it a revolution, not a riot, not an insurrection. And he came out, I think it was an album, Black Korea, but, you know, we're going to have to hard press our millennials and hipsters here, especially Brian the Mongolooch and Justin B. Love. I think the album he did was Black Korea, and where he dissed us, the Guardian Angels, was Dirty Mac. Let's see if we can come back with that Dirty Mac. But anyway, in the meantime, while they strain their brains, because I know they're just not into this, let's go to the phones. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue is Jay, who's calling all the way from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Jay?
Hey, how you guys doing today? Ebony, you are amazing, all in all. But
thank you,
my
Jay.
Point is, Curtis, you actually sound bitter, like you really want to use the word
right
out in the open And, you know, because you can't, you know, because of there's a stigma behind you using it. You sound like you're upset. I mean, no matter who uses the word, whether you're black or you're white, it's going to cause people's eyebrows to raise, even if, you know, you're black and somebody else is using it around you in the company of other people. So, I mean, why would, if there's a word that's negative, you know, it'd be like if there was a word that offended Jewish people and a bunch of young Jewish people started using that word, you know, I'm supposed to feel left out because I can't use it. If I know that's a word that, you know, deals with the Holocaust or deals with pain amongst that group, I want to stay far away from that word.
Why as a black man would you use a word with such a negative connotation?
Is this guy black?
To itself. Of course Jay's black.
Well, what is everybody?
First of all, I got to tell you, I thought Jay might have been white, but go ahead.
Jay is black and he's come back.
Curtis is right. You know, I am black, but everybody doesn't use that word out in an everyday basis. So, you know, when you think that everybody speaks like Ice Cube in his songs, you know, that's not true. You know, so at the same time, you know, again, why ask yourself as a person, why do you feel the need to feel left out that you can't use that word? So just look at stuff.
I'm not left out. I've used many, many other words. I've used the N-word in my time, especially I caught a beat down from blacks. I've used the term Moulinian, which was common in the Italian-American community, as they would use spaghetti benders against us when we were in the midst of our battles way back in the 60s and 70s. So there's a lot of terms that people can use, but they're all negative. Spaghetti benders is negative. Moulinian is negative. The N-bomb is negative. Why would a person use the very word that has such a negative connotation to one another of the same race is beyond me?
Curtis, what Jay and I are trying to tell you is that most black people that I know don't even get down like that. Now let's go to Mike from Hackensack. You're on WABC, Mike.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Ebony, K. Williams, and Curtis. That's how the show should be sounding. And K is for class, not Kardashian, just to let you know, Ebony.
Schooling you, Curtis.
Class, that's with a C.
Schooling you.
No. Well, let me talk to you about the N-word. So I feel totally against it. It's ignorant, and maybe some people just need to be educated. Pick up a book, because those black Americans that died a long time ago, the last thing they might have heard was the N-word.
That's right. It's
something that you should never be repeated, ever.
And I don't see youngsters being schooled by people like Ice Cube or Jay-Z or Nas or other people that they look up to that say, we were younger, it's not appropriate.
Curtis,
yes.
It should be up to the parents. The parents are the role models.
That's true.
Not all these people, all these rappers. That's not role models.
Mike.
The
parents are using it too, right in the house.
That's not always true.
They're
I think
using
you're very
it right
much
in the house.
Generalizing. Very much generalizing.
If you see a kid who's using the N-bomb on a constant basis, they not only picked it up in the streets, they picked it up at home. 1-800-848-WABC. It's the brand new show that you need to be listening to and spread the word on. It's Curtis and Ebony, right here Monday through Fridays, 12 to 3 on your place to be WABC.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect,
a great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
But I'm much too black. Damn, cracker. Dirty Macca. Even the guardian angels got mental. But never seen they ass walking through South Central. Little superhero, don't let me catch up. I around and wet ya. Trying to dirty Mac me out. Trying to take food out my kid's mouth.
Really?
You're lucky that my people are stronger than your Evo.
Dang, Curtis. Your ass, what a coming for you. Cube is coming
right
for you.
Calling me out.
Dang.
That was a song that he did in the aftermath of the Rodney King riots. It was called Black Korea, the album. And the song specifically where he called me and the Guardian Angels out was Dirty Mac. That was Ice Cube. Because he was supporting the rioters attacking Korean stores. If you remember, some of the Koreans were smart. They had AK-47s. They shot them in the air. That chased the looters away. Other Koreans, they just ran from their stores, and they got looted and burned down. In fact, I remember ordering the Guardian Angels. I was right there near our headquarters to protect Fredericks of Hollywood. They were even raiding the lingerie shop.
I know it.
A bunch of trannies who went on a rampage right there in Hollywood. Anyway, let's go to the phones. And first up in the queue is Paul calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC, Paul.
What's up, Curtis? What's up, Ebony? No, I just got a statement to make. Like Ice Cube was saying, he could say that word in his songs and everything, but what about, I think it's very confusing for all the millions of white kids that listen to his music and Chinese kids. It's not just black kids listening to his music. So when they sing the lyric, they can't use that word. They're so confused. They're kids. They don't know the difference. It's not like us. I'm 50 years old. But my kids are 14 and 11. They listen to rap. They're only going to get older and listen to all this nonsense he's spilling and the N-word he's dropping all the time. But now they're saying, oh, we can't say it because they think it's okay because they hear it in the song.
Well, I guess, Paul, white guys and white gals can only hum the music because it can't repeat the lyrics.
I mean, y'all
lyrics.
Are being
hum
funny, it. But I mean, hum really, it. that's the truth. I mean, that was the example I gave, Paul. One of my good older guy white friends has teenage white sons as well.
I mean, we're all raising black kids, all of us. It's all black culture. White, black.
Well, that's the problem I have with
it. They idolize them. That's everything. But then they're saying they can't say this word.
But you can't.
They shouldn't use the word.
But you shouldn't use the word.
No one should use the word.
Nobody should use the word.
Jay-Z can't rap about it, and then expect the little white kids that are singing the lyrics. What are they going to beep it?
But Paul, listen. You're their father. Paul, listen. You're their father, though, right? Of your kids. Can't you instruct? Okay. So right. So how about you? Demonstrate some leadership as the father and say, you know what? I know ignorantly, listen to me, Paul, demonstrate leadership and say, you know what? Ignorantly, Cube and Jay-Z and these other guys are using this word, but I'm going to teach you to do better than them and not use it. How about that?
Oh, no. Just tell the kids, you're not permitted to repeat the language. You'll just have to hum the bars. You know, like Mitch Miller. You used to say, hum it.
You're being funny, Curtis, but I think that makes sense.
Let's go to Frank in Manhattan. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Frankie.
Hello, Ebony. Hello, Curtis. I have a little bit of a different take. A 55-year-old white male, grew up in New York, fought 4 grown children. I like Ice Cube. I think he's a very smart young man, but I find it offensive that a man with his influence and his power doesn't want to do everything, including all people, but especially someone in his position, to eliminate this word from the face of the earth, to perpetrate it to young African-American kids, and to say it's okay when all it's been associated with is oppression, slavery, torture. To me, I don't understand what he's thinking about. I just don't get it.
Well, Frank, we're going to get into it. Hopefully he'll join us on the Curtis and Ebony show. Because, look, frankly, as a black woman, I have the same feeling. I don't see any upside to using the word.
You know what
I see a lot of downside.
You know what color Ice Cube he believes in? It ain't his blackness. It's the green in between. If he can make money like Jay-Z and castrate and prostrate his own people and demean his own people.
I don't think that's his
intention. To him, that's way more important, his bank account, than any brothers and sisters.
I think I disagree, Curtis. I mean, we'll let him speak for himself. Hopefully he joins us. I don't think it's a sellout move. I think it's a bit ignorant.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great role model.
Oh, man.
I'd want every kid looking up to Ice Cube. Oh, by the way.
By the way, he's done some things that are good.
Yeah, he's a good step and fetch guy.
No,
in those barbershop
Curtis,
movies.
You are so
barbershop,
hating
right?
So bad. He's donated a
is
lot
that,
of money.
Is that a black stereotype?
He has donated. No, actually.
Barbershop 1, 2, and 3.
Black folks have barbershops. I grew up in a beauty shop.
No,
is that a stereotype?
I understand, but he plays a stereotypical character out of Step and Fetch.
You're ridiculous.
Anyway, right now, though, let's get some news headlines from Ken Duffy.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
Another core principle is that those coming to our country must embrace our values and love our people.
Must embrace our values and love our people. Well, how about this for loving our people and embracing our values? How about a man who puts his own health on the line, removing the hazardous and disastrous materials from ground zero in the wake of the tragic 9/11 terror attacks right here in New York City, making that sacrifice at his own health's expense, ending up with depression, lung problems, gastrointestinal diseases, and anxiety. How about that for the American embodiment of values, of loving thy fellow brother and sister? Well, that's the story of Carlos Cardona, 48-year-old man who, even though he did that, he put himself on the front line and he sacrificed in this way, is subject now to deportation. Might end up right back to Mexico, Curtis, because he was one of the 41,000 people that ICE agents took into custody in President Trump's first 100 days. So when I hear the president speaking at that rally, what was that, in Iowa?
Yes.
Talking about the embodiment of the values, and I think that's important. I think that everybody feels that if you're going to live in our country, you should represent and have the best of us. But I don't know, Curtis, what is more representative of that type of sacrificial patriotic value than being there at ground zero, picking up the waste and all of that stuff, that what we know Carlos Cardona did, yet here's a man that possibly, in his hearings July 1st, could be looking at deportation, being sent back to Mexico after being in this country for over, 30 years, working as a construction worker, sacrificing at ground zero, having a family, having children that are American citizens, and yet he's still looking at deportation. So I don't understand President Trump's narrative around immigration when, on one hand, it's emboldening the patriotic values of Americana. This sounds as apple pie American as it can come to me.
All right, well, let me flesh it out a little more. So Carlos comes to the United States back in the 80s. He's coming in from Colombia. He gets involved in construction work, but he gets pinched. He gets arrested. He gets tied up into the criminal justice system for a nonviolent drug crime, which he cops a plea to. He's released, and although he remains, obviously, an illegal alien, he doesn't work his way towards getting a green card or citizenship or take any other measures. He continues to work under the radar screen. And as you mentioned, when 9/11 occurred, he was part of a demolition and recovery team that went into the pit to remove the debris. And obviously, at that time, nobody was vetting people as to who they were. It's like if you had skills, if you were ready to go into the pit and you were part of some kind of construction or rehab crew or hazmat crew or part of those that were coming in to do demolition, everybody just came rushing in addition to the first responders, the cops, the firefighters, the EMTs and the others who had to maneuver the debris hand to hand because they were afraid at that time that vibrations from any heavy moving machinery might cause some of the other remaining buildings to either tilt or collapse themselves. So it was a very, very difficult process. A lot of manual labor was involved. You are correct. He has since become ill. But in order to pave the way for him to be able to remain in the United States, unlike the 41,000 that you mentioned that's been pinched by ICE, Limigre, Immigration Naturalization Service, since Trump was sworn in as president, Andrew Cuomo, the governor, gave him a pardon of that conviction back in 1990. His wife apparently is already an American citizen. I would have thought that because he is married to her, would have carried a lot of weight. But he is right now expected to be sent back, as you mentioned, to Mexico very soon with a lot of these other 41,000 who are being detained at immigration facilities around the country. The question is, ladies and gentlemen, do you make an exemption for Carlos Cardona? Or he broke the rules, he came in illegally, he committed a crime in 1990, and those are the rules, and he's got to go back. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Now, Curtis, you mentioned an important word, and that is the rules. Well, as you can imagine, President Trump had a lot to say about the rules.
That's why I believe the time has come for new immigration rules, which say that those seeking admission into our country must be able to support themselves financially and should not use welfare for a period of at least 5 years.
In fact, I would have opted if Trump would have used the old school rules, which applied to my grandfather and grandmother when they came in from Italy on my mother's side, and for my grandfather and grandmother when they came in from Poland on my father's side. You had to have a sponsor. There had to be either a family member or a friend who on the American side was saying to the United States government, we will incur all costs. They will not become a detriment to the country. So if they get into any problems, if they can't pay their bills, they are going to be our responsibility. And a lot of families couldn't find sponsors back then. There was nobody necessarily willing to step up. Others, they had a sponsor. They would show up at Ellis Island for immigration process, and then they'd be released to the sponsor, and then it would be up to the sponsor to make sure that they had to cover any and all bills that might become the responsibility of the federal government. And I think that's a fair way to do it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I think the consequence of that, though, Curtis, is it will limit, and certainly it does become a have and have not situation. But let's go to our callers. We now have Patrick calling from Newark. Patrick, you're on Live and Local with Curtis and Ebony. Patrick, you there?
Hi, good afternoon, Ebony, Ebony Class and Curtis. Question I have for you is, does the person have a valid Social Security number? Like, is he paying taxes in this country right now?
I don't have any information. I don't think he has a Social Security number.
Well,
he has no citizenship.
Well, remember, Patrick and Ebony, what a lot of these workers have, the illegal aliens, is they have the Social Security cards of dead Americans.
Oh, Lord.
And since we haven't cleaned up the rolls, they're out there to be purloined, the names and the numbers. And let's say the guy's name who died was Frank Smith, and you're looking at Carlos Cardona. You would think, hey, you don't look like a Frank Smith.
It's profiling, Curtis.
Well,
we don't do that in this country.
Well, we should be doing that because we accepted. And, Patrick, remember, you pay taxes on a Social Security card even if it's that of a person who's already died.
Yeah, so he very well could be paying taxes.
But we don't know.
We don't know. I'm
just assuming if he was part of a hazmat crew, they probably...
They probably withheld taxes, I would imagine.
Right, or they probably demanded some form of identification, which usually comes in the form of a Social Security card. And a lot of the illegal aliens just have Social Security cards of dead Americans. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go next in the queue to Denise, who's calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Denise?
Hi. I have two questions. I want to know why somebody is here for that amount of time and has not become legal. And if you discuss that while I was on hold, I'm sorry. And also, I do believe you can make exceptions across the board for people, say, who have helped on cleaning up the World Trade Center after the terror attacks or something else extraordinary, like I believe they do for service people. Somebody wants to join the service, I believe they speed up citizenship or residency. But other than that, I mean, if you come to this country and you're here illegally and you commit a crime, very commendable that he worked on the Trade Center. But those two issues, why you're here that long, and the fact that you committed a crime, so, it's reasonable.
So here's the thing, Denise. You bring two important topics up. The reason he's not been able to become a citizen and he's been here this long is directly correlated to the crime that he garnished a conviction under. Now, I'll say this because when I was in North Carolina, Curtis, I used to represent a lot of these types of people who were here with no documentation.
Illegal aliens.
I don't like that. People can't be illegal. But their status certainly was and can be and oftentimes is. The problem is, as a public defender, which most of these people are indigent, that's all they get in terms of legal defense. And I was a proud legal public defender, Curtis. There are plenty of people that do a great job, but they're overworked, they're underpaid, and a lot of times people just end up pleading out like a feed machine. And once you do that, you really interrupt your ability to have status legally.
He did sell drugs, though.
I mean, I don't know. Like you said, he pled out. I don't know.
I'm assuming
he
did.
Pled guilty. He pled guilty. That's right. That's what we do know. And that's
you can't just wipe that away.
Well, but except that's exactly what happened when Cuomo gave him this pardon here.
Let's go to Laura, who's calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here at WABC. Laura.
Hi, Curtis. Hi, Ebony. Calling from Queens. Listen, I really do believe that there can be and should be exceptions. And I don't even think that like a minor drug thing back in the 90s, is such a big deal, so to speak.
So you are in favor of him possibly being granted permission to stay based off of the facts that you know?
My issue is, Ebony, is that I just think that your argument is weak, that he helped out at Ground Zero. It wasn't this, like, noble deed that he did.
Well, no, he was working. Yeah, I get you.
He was working. He was getting paid. So I just don't think it's a strong enough argument to say, like, hey, here's this Ground Zero worker, and now we're going to deport him.
Well, no.
He was working. He wasn't volunteering his time out of the goodness of his American heart.
I hear you, but there are also a lot of people that were not willing to take those physical and emotional risk and do that very important work, right?
True. I really think that it should be. Listen, I'm a Trump supporter. I voted for Trump. I still think that there are issues that can be and should be a case-by-case basis.
I think that's fair, Laura. I think so, too, Curtis. I think that there has to be I guess this is my bigger problem, though, in this conversation. I think I hear two narratives coming out of President Trump on this issue. I hear one where he was on the stump and even in Iowa last night. If it's the most violent, heinous, drug trafficking, murderous, rapist types of undocumented people here, illegal status people here, they need to go. Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But when you're talking about, you know, nonviolent offenders or people that really, you know, have changed their game and are contributing to society in a meaningful, positive way, I just don't understand the point of kicking them out.
Boy, you are so soft. You are so weak. But that's because you're a lawyer.
Do you see these arms?
And you represent.
Do you see these arms?
You've represented illegals.
If you're listening, I want you to go to WABC Radio/live right now and check out these biceps.
Let me
call
tell you
me weak again.
You do
punch
not
you
have
the
24-inch guns of Michelle Obama.
Oh, please. I would put my bicep up against.
Those
you
are,
see that tricep?
Those are shrimpy biceps and triceps.
Hating.
Please. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
I thought the law had a law won.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
Back to the brand new Curtis and Ebony show. The phone lines are lit. We're going straight to them. William from New York, you're on Live and Local with Curtis and Ebony.
Yeah, hi, Curtis Ebony. Listen, I got to tell you, Carlos, God bless him for doing the work he did. Unfortunately, I understand, he comes over here illegally. He works for a construction company, probably off the books, and if you can prove I'm wrong, I apologize. And he winds up getting sick, and I'm sure he was treated by doctors for which he didn't have to pay a dime. Then in 1990, he commits this drug-related crime, from my understanding, and gets pardoned by our mini Obama, Cuomo, the governor, pardons the guy, gets a couple of votes for it. Listen, Carlos, thank you. However, you're illegal. Get back to the end of the line and try again.
Well, I guess
well, William, you gotta figure out an opinion on this issue, William. I can't tell which side of this you're on.
I guess if God is going to bless him, right, he'll sort of have him come back as a homegrown, born American.
God bless America, of course.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and lead
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour one, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com. Sitting next to me, our co-hostess, Ebony K, not C, K for Kardashian,
K for
Williams,
class.
Who is flexing here, what, your biceps, triceps? Trying to, what is it, intimidate me? Like you're gonna punch me right in the mouth?
Tried to play me shrimpy, Curtis?
Yeah, shrimpy.
Please.
But anyway, you go on WABCradio.com/live as she's flexing for all of you to see. In addition, you can hear the broadcast there also, and including while you're eyeballing it, at WABCradio.com/live. And last night, we had a chance to see this president when he's best. As was Barack Obama, as was Bush 43, campaigners in chiefs when they're on the road and they're away from Washington. And he was talking about how he can't get any help from the Democrats in reforming health care.
If we went and got the single greatest health care plan in the history of the world, we would not get one Democrat vote because they're obstructionists.
And then Mitch McConnell, who just moments ago came out and discussed the repeal process in the Senate bill that he and his minions have been working on.
We'll repeal the individual mandate so Americans are no longer forced to buy insurance they don't need or can't afford. We'll repeal the employer mandate so Americans no longer see their hours and take-home pay cut by employers because of it. We agreed on the need to improve the affordability of health insurance and policies contained in the discussion draft. We'll do that. It will eliminate costly Obamacare taxes that are passed on to consumers so we can put downward pressure on premiums, expand tax-free health savings accounts, and deploy targeted tax credits so we can help defray out-of-pocket costs, and shift power from Washington to the states so they have more flexibility to provide more Americans with the kind of affordable insurance options they actually want.
And then he was kvetching, complaining of how the Democrats in the Senate wouldn't work with him.
I regret that our Democratic friends made clear early on that they did not want to work with us in a serious bipartisan way to address the Obamacare status quo. But Republicans believe we have a responsibility to act, and we are, for our constituents, for our states, and for our country. Now, Democrats tell us it'd be wrong for the Senate to actually address these problems in a serious way while the law they've defended for 7 years teeters, literally teeters, on the edge of total collapse.
And as he was retiring into his offices, a number of demonstrators were outside, some of them getting arrested in acts of civil disobedience. There they go, getting dragged away into the paddy wagons by the Washington, D.C. and Capitol Police. So now, according to Mitch McConnell, there's 10 days that you have to read all of the changes in the Senate version from the House version passed by Paul Ryan and the Republican majority. And then he wants it to come to the floor for a vote. Many people are saying, well, 10 days is a lot more than Nancy Pelosi gave members of the Democrats in the House to look at that legislation of Obamacare, because she said, hey, just vote on it. Don't worry about it. You can read it later. But you think they can actually bisect it and dissect it in just 10 days with little debate and little discussion on the floor of the Senate?
Of course not. I mean, certainly who doesn't think they can is Senator Rand Paul, who's actually introduced legislation, Curtis, requiring a certain number of days because the good doctor is very meticulous and he wants to be able to go through it with a fine tooth comb. Listen, here's my take on this. I actually was pleased to see the repealing and eliminating of the individual mandate. Personally, I hate that part of Obamacare. And a couple other things.
Now, when you say the individual mandate, you mean the penalty that young people
paying,
like you would pay.
And I have been paying.
Because you never thought you would even get a sniffle or a cold. So you said, oof, why should I pay a penalty? I just don't want health care.
Well, not even that, Curtis. I believe I'll get a sniffle or a cold. In fact, I normally have to go to the doctor for just, you know, bronchitis, infection, whatever, a couple times a year. But what it's not worth to me is paying over $600 a month, which is what my coverage would cost, even with the subsidies. So no, I don't like the mandate, so I was happy to see this in the Republican.
So, Lori Holiosky, hallelujah, you've been given some relief if this becomes the law of the land.
Absolutely. In that regard, yes. But here's the other problem, because I've been consistent with my criticisms around Obamacare. The premiums are sky high, and what I'm not hearing from Mitch McConnell and what I wasn't seeing in the House bill is enough to drive down these premiums. And I got to tell you, Curtis, 7 years the Republicans have had to get this right. They've been promising their constituents and America in general a better health care system. And after 7 years, this is the best you can come up with? I'm just really not impressed. And frankly, I expected more.
Okay, so we have really three categories. We have those who are on the taxpayer's dime through Medicaid. Then you've got those who buy their own personal health care coverage. And then you've got other Americans where either it's a cooperative venture or it's fully paid for by the employer that you work for.
Sure.
But the insurance companies are involved in all these aspects, whether it's Obamacare, whether it is the Paul Ryan reform package, or whether it's Mitch McConnell's Senate Republican package. Why not just eliminate the insurance companies?
Oh.
Why not people pay into a fund for the doctors? And then the doctors disperse the payments. And obviously, the more the doctors make, the more percentage that they get. And make it so that you eliminate the insurance companies. The problem was when that was tried, I think it was back when Harry Truman was president, he wanted single-payer care. And we were well on our way to having single-payer care. The AMA, the American Medical Association, stepped in, and they actually encouraged insurance. So the doctors who could have controlled where the monies had gone could have had the pool of money to disperse amongst themselves, whether they're specialists or general practitioners, decided to bring the insurance companies in. And I got to tell you, it's been a mess ever since.
No, I mean, now you're talking too much like Wright, Curtis, because frankly, we all know. I mean, this is the same reason that they don't allow for the insurance policies to be sold across state lines. See, the lobbying efforts of these insurance companies, I mean, it's brutal. After the NRA and Planned Parenthood, I would say these medical insurance companies are some of the hardest out there. We can go straight to our phones now. Rich from Brooklyn, you're calling the Ramsey Subaru phone line here at Curtis and Ebony.
Yeah, I think that we should stop calling this Trump Care and just call it what it really is, the Unaffordable Care Act. I was calling it Stealth Care, but at least now they've given away their secrets. What's funny is that Donald Trump says, well, you know, if we had the greatest plan in the world, the Democrats would obviously not support it. Well, guess what? You don't have the greatest plan in the world. You have a plan that will throw 23 million people off of health care to fund rich douchebags like him. And what is going to end up happening is all these people are going to start voting against Republicans. So Republicans were hiding behind the bushes and putting it in the hands of 13 people to make those decisions. In the end of the day, this is an absolute disaster, and I really find it very interesting, Curtis, that you went ahead and you came up with the idea yourself of single payer. That's very interesting.
Well, no, I didn't come up with the idea. I was saying Harry Truman had tried
no,
it.
That you're supporting it, I think.
Wait. Don't misconstrue what I said. What I'm saying
Then I'm sorry. I take it back.
You have a fund for doctors, and doctors are part of complexes now. It's very hard as an individual practitioner to stay in business just offering general or even specialty treatment. So you work in a combine. Monies get contributed to a pool for doctors to distribute amongst themselves. Obviously, there should be a reward system so they can be incentivized. And you get the insurance companies out of the business because why do you need...
Cut the middleman out.
What do you need that person?
This is where all the costs are coming from, the
insurance companies.
Of course.
And then we get in Obamacare, we get the insurance companies involved in each and every state. They got to be part of the process. Then we're subsidizing insurance companies.
And ultimately, healthcare...
What do we need insurance companies for?
Ultimately, Curtis, we might have more insurance and more coverage, but healthcare quality, it's going down.
How about anybody out there who works in the insurance care industry, whether you're a salesperson for them or a provider for them, explain to me why we need insurance when, in fact, it's just adding to the cost, whether it's Obamacare, Trump Care, whatever you want to call the new plan that may emerge from the Senate if it ever gets voted on the upside instead of the downside. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go, if we can, to Daniel, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Danny?
It should be like Social Security. They should take it out of everybody's check by... You know, like you pay your taxes, just automatically taking out your check, and everybody will be covered.
Boo.
And why not?
Go ahead,
you don't want to pay for poor people or yourself?
It's not that, Daniel. It's just that it can be a lot of money. If we could, if
well,
it was
a
you know what?
Money. No.
Daniel, let me tell you this. If it was like $300 or something, $350 maybe even, no, not a problem. But you're talking about premium $600-$700 a month? That's unaffordable.
I think the government should run it, not the insurance company. The government should run it.
Oh, because we really trust our American government with a bunch of money.
You're doing it now. You're trusting them. And look what they're doing to you now.
I hate it. Yeah, look at education. Look at all the things that we put all our money, hard tax earned money into.
You're just a greedy young person. That's what
you know
it
what?
Is. You just don't
I'm
want
just
to pay for us.
I'm just a sister out here trying to make a dollar.
Folks, as we're getting older and we're drawing more on
Brian
the health
care,
we're drawing more on the health care dollars because as you eventually will age, Ebony, you will find you're going to the doctors more often, either for preventive care or catastrophic care. So Enjoy your health now as you're a millennial. What do you call yourself?
Grandma millennial.
Grandma millennial. But what happens when you reach the age of a grandmother status and now you're actually going to the hospital? You're going to specialists.
Sure. You know what the hope is, Curtis? I will be earning more money and I can actually pay for my coverage. How about that noble idea?
Probably you will have capped out at that point. You'll have capped
out. Don't be trying to count my money.
What about if you're retired and you're on Social Security and, all right, you got your 401k and hopefully it hasn't become a 201k. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen,
exactly.
I don't care whose program it is. People are living longer. They want to live with a better quality of life. My generation of baby boomers are going to break the century mark, which means
you
more
guys are draining us, by
right,
the way. Thank
more
you.
Of us are going to be in all kinds of specialized units for care to provide us in the last 2 years of our life, care that wasn't provided before, so that we can inhale and exhale on a machine.
You know what, Curtis? I love you. God bless you. I want you around for 100 more years. But do you and your kind have to drain the pockets of me and my kind? Is that what we're doing?
Man, you are so selfish, you millennials and hipsters. 1-800-848-WABC.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
And finally, we're seeing what the Senate's GOP health bill looks like, and our phones are lit to high heavens. We're going straight to them. Steve from Aramont, I heard you've got words for me. You're live and local with Curtis and Ebony.
Hi, yeah, you know, I'm wondering if, why can't we do away?
What are you eating, Steve? It sounds delicious. What is that?
Why don't we just do away with car insurance? Let's make that optional, too, okay, instead of being mandated. Let's make car insurance optional. Let's say you think you're the greatest driver in the world. Well, why should you have car insurance?
I think that's a great idea, Steve.
You know what? Then what happened? But you know why? You know why it's mandated? Because it's pretty sure that sooner or later, someone's going to have an accident, whether you like it or not. That's what it's called, an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Just like getting sick. I mean,
Steve.
Will we have more freedom if we don't have car insurance?
Listen, Steve, I
why
hear you.
That
I let me tell you. I hear what you're saying. I don't think that I'm invincible. I do think that if I'm the president, this is what I would do, Curtis, is simplify the whole thing. I don't like single payer. What I would do is have everybody in America have a basic catastrophic coverage. It would be that cheap $200-$300 a month type of deal. And if you can afford and you want to purchase an elevated health care package, you can. And if you don't want to, you will not be penalized. Boom. Drop the mic. Done. Let's go to our next call. Go ahead.
Well, what about if you have to get catastrophic care?
That's what I just said. Then you have catastrophic coverage.
Yep,
so if you got cancer or something like that,
I realize. But you realize increasing numbers of Americans are getting catastrophic care. Where is the money going to come for that?
No, we're paying it. I'm saying
well,
that would be.
Well, then you're going to have to charge them the rate. Do you realize the rates for catastrophic care, how high they are?
That would be better than these Cadillac plans that cost $600-$700 a month.
Let's go to Laura, who's calling from Chelsea. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Laura?
Hi there. I like your upgrade in partners. Anyway, the whole thing about insurance being shackled to the employer is something that started back in the days of having price controls on people's salaries during the Depression era or sometime way back then. I forgot which president. But that's what started the whole thing of having people get their insurance from their employer. And I think if we unshackled the employer relationship to the health insurance, it would be a big improvement because it would put everybody in the same giant market, just like you don't get car insurance and apartment insurance and all this other kind of insurance from your employer. And it would take the power. You wouldn't have your employer be like your parent saying, oh, you're eating a donut or whatever, you know, all these crazy things. You know, I don't see why we've taken the biggest portion of people and made them the privileged class of having insurance from their employer, and then just old people and poor people and all these other people are just out, you know, getting the high premiums. That's not right, you know.
Well, look, employers want to opt out of that. You don't think employers want to continue to provide insurance? Every chance they get, they're trying to opt out.
Yeah, my mom
hates
it.
Opt everybody out and just turn turn it into an insurance pool, just like with car insurance and everything else. And I bet the cost
would
come down.
Yeah, but you know something? Health coverage is going to cost way more than car insurance.
No kidding. But I don't think the employer belongs in the mix. He's not your parent. He's your employer.
Oh, they're going to love it. The employers are going to love it. Glory Halioski, hallelujah. You give them relief. Let's go to Richard, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Richie Rich.
Ebony, Curtis, how are you? Hello?
I've had better days because I know you sell insurance, and I'm trying to put you out of business, Rich.
Well, you know, I have many, many diplomatic clients, and even they, when they have deep pockets, they complain about the premiums. But as I've said before, all right, I think that girl you just had, but I have to applaud her, all right? We have one big plan where everybody has to participate. All right, that would work. You see, Obama had the right idea. Even though I didn't vote for him, he had the right idea. Unfortunately, the penalty for not signing up for Obamacare was too small. We argued, the organization.
Shh. Why are you saying that, Richard?
Ebony, listen. He had the right idea, but the penalty was too small. We argued that the penalty should be 25%, just like homeowners.
What? You're trying to bankrupt me, Richard? What in the world?
Ebony, just listen for 1 second. If you've got a young person, 25, 30 years old, comes out of college making $30,000 a year, do you think he's going to pay $5,000 in premium?
Hell no.
He'll pay the 6% penalty, which comes
Richard,
out a lot less.
I know.
He knows the insurance companies, when he gets sick, the insurance companies have to take them anyway. Why do you think the insurance companies are dropping out across the nation? They're getting killed. They're only getting old, sick people, Ebony. You got to get young, healthy people in the insurance.
But what's my incentive, Richard, as a young, healthy person? And that's what I am. Here's what I want to know, Curtis. What is my incentive to buy into these overpriced, expensive plans so I could take care of you, Grandpa?
If Sarah Palin was correct and they were going to have death panels, I would not want you, Ebony K. Williams, sitting on it. Because all of us, that's
oh
it.
Oh, my God.
You'd be like, pull the plug.
No.
Euthanasia.
No.
You're too old.
No. No, well, coming up, speaking of that.
Every colitis attack I have, no.
Curtis,
you just went to the ER, too much of a
cost.
Why
would you say something like that? I would personally make a yogurt run for you any chance that I could.
Oh, please. Yeah,
okay?
You'd probably poison it, right?
No.
You wouldn't put saccharin in it. You'd put hemlock in it.
I mean, I know we just started this this ride, Chris, but I want you around for a long, long, long time. And next up, we're talking about President Trump sent out an invitation a couple days ago asking my people, the Congressional Black Caucus, to come for a round two at the White House. And apparently they didn't take too kindly to that. We'll get into it next up on the Curtis and Ebony Show. But up first, headlines from Ken Duffy.
Bring the noise!
Studio View and WABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect.
A great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony, 77 WABC.
Well, in this case, it's no to Mr. President Donald Trump, coming from the Congressional Black Caucus. President Trump asking the 49-member body to join him at the White House for a meeting, as they've done once before, back in March. They all went to the Oval, sat down with the president and Mike Pence and Omarosa of, yes, that Omarosa of The Apprentice. She literally serves at the president's request as the director of African American Outreach.
Now, hold on a second. Omarosa, who gave new meaning to the acronym SWA, Sister with Attitude, you're just a pretender to her crown, Ebony Kardashian Williams, when it comes to Omarosa. Man, that is an attitude on two legs. And she's in charge of dealing with your peeps?
It's horrible. But by the way, you know, I was not going to go here, but, you know, you just kind of, you know.
How could you not go there?
No. I'm about to say what I'm about to say to you, Curtis. This is about you.
I mean, you started off wrong by coming in with Destiny's Child and
saying, first of all, that was like a slow jam remix,
well,
too,
that's what
by
I'm
the
saying,
way.
Because that's generally what women have told me over the years. No. You can't do the grind here.
Unlike Cosby, though, you listened. Good job, Curtis. See, that's why you stayed out of trouble. I was going to not go here, but, you brought it on yourself. Getting tweets that said, clearly, judging by the looks of things here in our studio, brought to us by NJDiet.com, I work out all the time and would beat you 5 out of 7 days arm wrestling. I just wanted to put that out there. All right, now back to the story. All right, so Cedric Richmond.
I thought you didn't go to the gym, right?
Well, I don't, but I work out. You know what the gym is?
Yeah, what do you
the
work
city
out?
Of New York.
Lifting,
the city of New York.
Lifting your cappuccino
the city
up and
of
down?
New York is my gym, Curtis. Now listen.
Well, lifting your cell phone up and down. Boy, that's your daily workout. The Ebony Kardashian Williams workout.
The jealousy that is permeating in this studio right now. Okay, so Cedric Richmond, he is the congressman from Louisiana. He is the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. He responded to President Trump's request that the body of 49 black legislators return.
I got vapid there for a second. You said Cedric the Entertainer,
no,
the same guy was with Ice Cube in the Barbershop sequel?
Zamora, you got to get your black folks straight, Curtis. No, this is Cedric Richmond. Cedric Richmond.
Oh, okay.
He's actually
so
also
has nothing
a good
to do
of mine.
With the Steve Harvey show. Okay,
no,
all
get,
right.
get you some of. We don't all entertain, Curtis. That's
okay.
not our only job here in America. Some
okay.
of us work in Congress.
You
okay,
got it.
It's in 2017. Get with the times, Curtis. Okay, so I've known Cedric actually for about 12 years. Back when I was a law school student, he was a lowly state representative, and he's ascended to the halls of Congress, and everyone's we're proud of old Cedric. So listen. This is what he said when the president asked him to come back. Quote, we've seen, by the way, listeners, we're trying to get Cedric to call in. He was called to the floor for a vote, but if we can get him in the next 20 minutes or so, he'll call in himself. But he said, we've seen no evidence that your administration acted on our calls for action. It's become abundantly clear that the conversation with the entire CBC would be entirely unproductive. Specifically, their concerns about Flint, Michigan, and things of this nature have fallen on deaf ears. And I fail to see how a, quote, social gathering would benefit the policies that we advocate for. Also, he said that we have a lot to lose under your administration. And this is a direct response to the shadiness that President Trump said on the campaign trail.
Look how much African-American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following. What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? What do you have to lose?
So many black folks, Cedric Richmond among them, saying, we've got a lot to lose, Mr. President. So that's what that line is for.
What does that have to do with being invited for a second time around to come to the White House, even if it's just under the banner of a social get-together, just to exchange pleasantries, maybe have a few drinks? That's how conversation leads eventually to bonding. This president agreed, although it wasn't right now, to actually sit down with the evil seed of Kim Jong mentally ill. Remember when he said, I'd be more than happy. It would be my honor. Remember, my honor to sit down with this nut job with the bad haircut, the fat boy there in North Korea behind this kimchi curtain. Why wouldn't members of the Black Congressional Caucus, if nothing more, just come to the White House, you socialize. It doesn't mean you have to agree, but you get a chance to make your points with members of the administration who are also going to be there, and maybe you can convince one or two on a few of the topics of concern to your delegation. But to just diss and dismiss the president's invitation is you're basically saying, we don't even want to have dialogue with you. We don't even want to have conversation with you. Which does not move the ball forward.
So this is why I really, really hope Cedric can call in and give us more insight. Because actually, Curtis, when I heard that they'd rejected the invitation, I got to tell you, the social media response from most black people I know was happy. They were happy. The quote, hashtag resist. They were happy that they are deciding not to go. But my thought was, I'm not a Trump supporter. Didn't vote for the man. Didn't vote for her either. But I believe in having a seat at the table. That is my personal belief. So if Trump had asked me to go, sure, I'll go have a conversation. Now, I'm not going to take pictures with you in Trump Tower and all that foolishness. And I think this is a little bit where it looks like this sentiment of resisting is coming from. They don't want to be a part of the, quote, social gathering. They don't want the photo op. Basically, I think, Curtis, they don't want to feel used by the president to give him, quote, street cred amongst black people in this country and say, oh, that's what they would call, what'd you call Cube earlier? Shucking and jiving?
Yes.
Yeah.
Step and fetch.
Step and fetch. Yeah, I think there are black legal lawmakers in this country that feel showing up to Trump a second time, because they did go, to their credit, back in March. And they're saying, Curtis, that they didn't feel they were heard. They didn't feel the president took them seriously. And so going back a second time might be a step and fetch, as you would say.
When you think of Donald Trump and his family, Melania and his son, Barron, having for the first time gone to Camp David. Immediately, it said to me, the Camp David Accords. That's where Jimmy Carter was able to bring together Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat, two lifelong enemies of Egypt and Israel. And they met on many occasions, and it was harsh at times and caustic. And oftentimes, one party or the other would just walk away and say, this isn't going to work. But eventually, they hammered out a peace agreement. To this day, that has remained the relationship between Israel and Egypt, one of the better ones in the Middle East that that Israel has with any of its surrounding countries. So you say to yourself, what is the problem? This is not optics.
Nobody's but I think they do think it's optics. You got to remember, these are people, they have to go back to their constituents, though. They got to go back to their communities where they represent, in many of these cases, predominantly
say,
black communities.
I went to the president on two
occasions.
And
they're going to say you looked a fool. They're going to say you look like Steve Harvey. They're going to say you look like, you know, Kanye. Right, right. Coming down.
Is that with the dyed blonde hair or without the dyed blonde hair?
Well, Kanye ain't been right since his mama died, but that's enough of that. Let's go to our phones here. Jill calling from New Jersey. You're on Live and Local with Curtis and Ebony.
Hi. I just can't believe they would refuse to just come and talk, that Cedric guy, the Black Caucus thing. I just think that is so closed-minded. I mean, we just went through 8 years of Obama, but, you know, this country is Democratic and it's Republican, and you have to, you know, just be open-minded. I mean, I just can't believe that.
Okay, I hear you, Jill, but what about the argument that they were open-minded back in March when they did all go? And I want to say for the record, there are individual black lawmakers that are willing to go to the White House. What they don't want to do is the big group photo op and the big group social gathering, because they maybe feel like the agenda will get lost. Does that make sense, Jill?
I mean, not really. Being invited is being invited. So what do
you want to be invited for something that feels productive to your constituents, right? You don't want to just go just to say you went and had some tea and crumpets.
What happened in March? Did they express, you know, what they would like Donald Trump?
They did. Yes, they expressed the concerns, like I said, about the water in Flint, Michigan, the you know, killings of by unarmed black people, and they don't feel the needle moved.
Well, excuse me, although it's still the infancy of the Trump administration, I noticed there were a lot more racially charged situations, particularly in the second term of office for Barack Obama, than we've experienced with, quote, this guy who doesn't like black people in the White House. For years, the three amigos used to run out around together. Don King, Al Slim, Shady Sharpton, and Donald Trump. The three of them, all throughout Atlantic City.
Yeah, now, that doesn't count. You don't get any black points for being with Al Sharpton and what's the other one? Don King.
Don King.
I can assure you.
Isn't it great to be an American, Don King? He beat the manslaughter rap in Cleveland. Al Slim, Shady Sharpton beat the tax rap.
Well,
and Donald Trump. Trump didn't pay his taxes. So, I mean, look, all three amigos together forever.
I got to tell you, Curtis, that's, if
now
that's where you're getting your
Donald
black...
Now all of a sudden Donald Trump is anti-black.
No,
huh?
No, no, no. Those people that you named are not black. Those people are green.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. And Ebony here on WABC.
Hello?
Yes,
you're
Judy.
On, Judy.
Okay. I totally agree with them not going. If you look at Trump's record... He has never done anything for anyone. You look at the people that he brought in from Poland to build his buildings, and he reneged on them. He reneged on, was that Atlantic City? He reneged on his educational, what was that, a school or college or something?
Oh, Trump University, yeah.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the Black Congressional Caucus, Judy?
It has to do with his character.
Yeah, so nobody should meet with the President of the United States.
He is not to be trusted. I don't care what title he has. He is not to be trusted. His character is inane. Okay. As a matter of fact, I think the guy has,
ADD, adult deficit disorder? Okay.
Yeah.
So don't meet with the president. Boy, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I can tell you, I think Judy's making a point, but I'll tell you who will go meet with him, Curtis. Your good friend, my mother, Miss Williams, she just texted me live on air.
Good.
I will take a picture with Trump. Can I go? I'm black. The best part, I'm black. Thank you, mother. Okay, because we forgot.
But we can see your daughter, and that's for sure. Mama must be black. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. It's the Black Congressional Caucus. Disses and dismisses the President of the United States. That's a double oofah for them. To the phones we go. It's Turner who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony, Turner.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? How are y'all?
I've had better days.
Great. My comment is this, honestly. As a black conservative, I really want us to look at it like this. We knew in the 1960s that Johnson was racist. And then Kennedy and Martin Luther King started the Civil Rights Act, the negotiations. When Kennedy was killed, basically, Martin Luther King did not just get mad and walk away because we all knew Johnson was racist. He continued the mission to continue the Civil Rights Act. And what happened was he worked with someone he may not have agreed with, but it created an agenda. That's the last agenda that we've had in the black community. And if you look at the CBC, honestly, they've been at the bid and call of Hillary Clinton and every liberal.
Well, he's given a history lesson, Curtis. That's the truth.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host.
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour or two, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us to do this broadcast by NJDiet.com. That's a Britney Spears song in which she's basically expressing that you don't want your boy growing up to be a womanizer. So you need to sort of put the constraints into effect. And although I generally poo-poo anything Britney Spears does,
because you're a hater.
Yeah, but that's good advice. That's very good advice. And there are always people that have good advice for especially young boys when they're growing up. But put aside the good advice that Britney Spears was giving young men in that song. I noticed that I, particularly along with other men, keep getting advice from others, both men and women, whether they're in your family or they're outside of your family circle, about how to raise boys. And I have three. I have one, Anthony, who's 13. Then there's Carter, who is 9. And there's Hunter, who's 6. And people are always intervening in one way or another. Normally, they're mothers, who it just causes me to want to go to civil war because they're softening up these boys instead of developing them the way they really should. I'll give you an example. I'm over for my visitation on Sunday. The mom's away, so I've got the boys with me. I say, hey, get your baseball gloves, get the baseballs, get the bats. Let's go in the alleyway. Let's see how your hitting is. Let's see how your fielding is, your catching, your throwing. And I don't necessarily rate them one above the other depending on their skill levels, but just so we were having a good time. And at some point, my youngest son, Hunter, was hitting the ball, and it didn't go as he had hoped. And he started to cry at 6. And I said, Hunter, you're 6 years old. In fact, tomorrow it's one of these dopey moving up ceremonies that I got to go to. You know,
I don't believe in that.
I never graduated.
What grade is he going to?
He's going to first grade. So he's
kindergarten graduation?
Yeah, moving on up, right? So naturally, I got to be there, right? And I'm saying, man, I never had a graduation because I ended up getting kicked out of high school. But I don't ever remember having a graduation. So the point is, I'm going to this moving up ceremony. But back on Sunday, he's crying there. And I'm telling him, you're a young man now. You can't be crying. Because in my mind, like the age of 5, that's it. If you start crying after 5, you're getting weak. You're getting soft. You're not acting very manly. And then all of a sudden, the mother comes home later. She hears, naturally, the older kid ratted me out, Carter. Said, daddy was telling Hunter that he shouldn't be crying. And so what did the mother say? She goes, look, You got to understand, if boys are not crying or feeling or expressing their sentiments at that point, that's going to have a long-term lasting negative effect on his health and his relationships.
Yeah, I was going to say, you messed Hunter up for his future girlfriend and wife.
I said, what are you talking about? I said, this guy's got to show some mental strength. He's got to show some physical strength. He just can't collapse and fold and start crying there. Like, I didn't use the term a little girl, but...
No, yeah, but that's what you meant.
But the point was, to me, there is a certain age level where, okay, I understand you start crying. But it's up to a male role model or even a female role model at that point to move in and to say to the young man, No. You can't be doing that any longer. No. You got to show some strength, some internal and external strength. And it's sort of like what a lot of you women are doing now with your independence, your feminism, your equality. You want guys to cry, right? You want a sensitive guy, but not too much. Then all of a sudden, you're like parts of an aggressive male, but not all the time. So it's almost like when you're a guy nowadays, you need a coach on the sidelines who can sort of like call in the plays. You know, it's okay. You can show a little bit of a soft side here. No. You're aggressive, but a little too aggressive. So you need a little earbud in your ear from a coach, right? An offensive coordinator to tell you when you're off the beam, when you're on the beam. Instead of a guy just being a guy, I don't need an emotional coordinator.
What does that mean, a guy being a guy? Listen, I'm from the South, as you well know. I actually believe in gender roles. I'm not one of these women and men are the same. No, women are women and men are men. And if you're somewhere in between, God bless you, and I support that too. So I believe in gender roles, though, Curtis. But here's the issue. And this is not easy and this is not simple. I agree. I like men to generally be aggressive and strong and confident and all that stuff. And I would have said 5 years ago, you did the right thing to tell young Hunter not to cry because his ball didn't go in the right direction. Here's the problem that I'm seeing now as I'm dating these men that are anywhere from their mid-30s to mid-40s. A lot of them are what I call emotionally unintelligent, Curtis. They're not in touch with their feelings and their emotional connectedness. And what it does for our relationships with them as women that are, because we've been raised since we were little girls, to be in touch with our emotions and express them. We've been free to express them from the beginning of time. And our male counterparts, our adult male counterparts, have not been raised in this way. So you got a communications deficit. You got a disconnect where we are pouring our hearts out. Honey, I feel when you... I feel, you know, abandoned, not paid attention to, not listened to, all these things. And then we're met with deaf ears from our male counterparts because you guys have never been given permission, nor have you been instructed as to how to express your feelings. And so the relationship falls apart.
So where is it? I look at a young lady or a woman or a young girl.
In your case, a young lady for sure.
And let's just say they bust out with tears. They're just crying. To me, that's okay. That's okay. I don't know why they're crying, but I'm not sort of repulsed by that. But if I see a man or a young male adult or a young boy crying, and they continue to cry and cry, there's something innately in me that says, what's wrong with you?
Can I challenge you on that?
Get control of yourself, guy.
Let me challenge you on that, Curtis. Instead of saying, don't cry, because we're making it simple, like crying is the only thing that we're talking about here. We're talking about emotions. So maybe a lot of these boys and men cry, Curtis, because they don't have the words, because they don't know the vocabulary. Instead of crying, I'm disappointed, Dad, that my ball didn't go the way that I'd intended to. I'm hurt that I feel embarrassed, maybe. Because my brothers did so well out there and I didn't. You know, we have to give our boys the words to express the true range.
And that's what you're crying about? It's something
maybe if he had
that?
The words, he wouldn't be crying, Curtis.
Well, let me ask a basic question of our audience. And I'll rely more on my audience than you because, oh, my God. You're like,
trying to make Hunter's future girlfriend and wife to be in a successful relationship.
You want guys to cry out of one side of their eye and the other eye has to be dry. You want like a medze, poco, poco kind of guy growing up. At what age should boys be told you shouldn't be crying?
Never. They should never have their emotions restricted like that. So
our
you
numbers,
want somebody...
Our numbers. I need some help here, ladies and gentlemen. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. So a guy throughout his life, as far as you are concerned. If you look at a guy and he's like bawling, he's crying.
That's so simple, Curtis.
And it's not like somebody close to him passed away or something really tragic happened. I get that. I understand that. But it's something simple. He had a setback, or he got disturbed, or he got upset over something, and he's just like bawling his eyes out.
He's not. Go with me higher, Curtis. Let's elevate here a little bit emotionally. If a man has the vocabulary, hurt, disappointment, rage, upsetness, he will not just burst into tears at every little trigger. I promise you this.
How the hell are we ever going to beat ISIS if all of a sudden we're bawling?
Because it's all about ISIS.
How are we going to beat ISIS? You hit the ball to the left instead of the right, and you're bawling here at the age of six. Come on, man up. Let's go to Kevin, who's calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC, Kev.
Ebony, you're dead wrong. We need to stop making these boys soft. We need to stop the wussification of these young men out here, because what happens is all they do is they spend more time talking about their feelings, and they're not being the men that they're supposed to be the protector and the provider for our country and for our families and for our communities.
Kevin, are you married? Kevin,
yes,
are you married? Okay.
Yes,
so
I
when
am.
You are upset, embarrassed, disappointed, any of those ranges of emotion with your wife, do you express that?
Sometimes I do, but most times I don't. I'm man enough to be able to deal with it, and I'm man enough to be able to lead my family without crying about every little thing that goes on.
Exactly.
I hear you, Kevin, and I applaud your leadership in your household, but as the woman, it's very frustrating, because I can guarantee you, even when you don't speak on it, Kevin, your wife knows something's up and something's wrong, and she wants to support you, and she can't do that if you're not expressing it.
Well, let me say this about it. A generation ago, my dad and my mom, it was the same way. My dad was the strong, silent type, and my mom understood that because he was the leader and he was the provider. And she went to work also, don't get me wrong, but he was the provider and he was the leader of our family. And there were five African-American men who ended up going to college, getting married and having kids and being very successful without crying about, oh, the ball didn't go in or we lost the game.
Yep. Yeah, okay. And like the mother of my sons, everyone's a winner.
No, I don't believe in that.
No, they're losers out there. You don't perform on the gridiron or the asphalt or the diamond, and you lose.
Well,
you're
that's
a loser.
A different issue, of course. No, these participation trophies. Well, that's because they need to understand, you know, you're rewarded when you win.
No, it translates into real life, because what I see a lot of dudes doing, and I talk to a lot of guys, they cry about some guys cry about every little thing that happens in their household. I say, you know what? You need to man up, take control of your household, and move your household forward.
Oh, Curtis getting all excited. That's his talk. Oh, Lord.
Let's go to Jeff calling from Chatham. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC, Jeff.
Curtis and Ebony, first-time caller. Love you guys. You guys are awesome. But Curtis, is that you, my man? I really think that going through the emotions makes you become a more healthy person in the long run. So, Ebony, I agree totally with you. Yeah. I'm not saying that you need to be a blubbering fool.
Right.
At every little thing that happens, if you stub your toe, you're crying. That's when you need to man up. Look, I train Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu every day of my life. I get hurt. I get dinged. I get broken bones. I don't cry. But when something emotional happens to me, I lose a family member or just something emotional happens. Yeah, you know what? It's okay to cry, because your body needs to go through that in order to equalize itself.
Jeff sounds like a highly evolved specimen and an emotionally intelligent man.
I understand that, Death. But hitting the ball in the wrong direction and then my other son ratting me out to the mother.
Well, that's what you get.
Oh, I'm going to fix him.
That's what you get.
That rat. He needs to eat Parmesan cheese, Carter. I'll fix you if it's the last thing I do. Let's go to the phones. Next up in the queue, who is Frank, who I believe is calling from Sparta. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Frankie?
Yeah, I kind of agree with both of you guys. I mean, guys cry. I cry. I'm about the same age as you. And by the way, a big fan. Always have been, right from the beginning, man. But, yeah, it's okay, but at some point you got to tell your kids, this is stupid what you're crying over. Don't cry over stupid stuff. I mean, it's okay to cry, but not over stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, and that was pretty stupid stuff, hitting the ball in the wrong direction. Let's go to Sam calling from Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Ebony here on WABC. Sammy?
Curtis and Ebony, big fans of both you guys. We appreciate everything you do.
Appreciate you, Sam.
Thank you. Curtis, I was always told growing up that it takes more of a man to cry than it does a one not to. 2 days ago, I lost my American Bulldog to brain cancer.
Hmm.
I've been crying ever since.
Oh, no, that's understood. That's understood. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying if
you
things
are,
don't
you're
go
cold
your way,
and you're callous, Curtis, and you have no heart, and it's sad.
There's a time and a place for a man to cry, and it takes more of a man to cry than it does of one not to.
Amen.
Well, would you acknowledge it's better if you're going to let loose a good cry that you do it in private and not in public?
You can do it in private or public. And if people can't understand your emotions, to hell with them.
Amen, Brother Sam.
Not a good example for other young men.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got to teach them to hold it in. Hold it in.
Hold it all in. Buns. It's so unmanly. Crying over everything.
Let's see what you want, Curtis. You want everybody to hold it all in, and then they just explode and pop off one day, right? Just pop it off.
Man up.
Yeah, that's how we get to radicalized youths. That's exactly how.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Turn it up!
The stories, the moments, the new midday show.
I fought the law and the law won.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
And we're back to the brand new Curtis and Ebony show. We're going straight to the Ramsey Subaru phone line with Fred from Manhattan. You're on Live and Local with Curtis and Ebony.
Hello. Yeah, you know, I really feel sorry for Curtis's son. It really hit me. Curtis doesn't understand he called his son a young man. Curtis, your son is a child, a young child. He's a baby. And you look at hitting the ball wrong, or the ball incident, from a 60-something-year-old man perspective. You don't understand that he's an individual. He sees it from a six-year-old child's perspective. You're missing the entire point of everything. You remind me of Robert Duvall, who made that movie where he's a Marine and he treated his family like a Marine platoon. He went nuts. His family went nuts. And you're doing the same thing to your son.
No, driving
your son crazy.
No, I'm going to toughen my son up. He's not going to be a poo putt. He's not going to be a wuss. He's not going to be there crying in the middle of the diamond.
You moron.
Six years old. He's a young man. He's going to be playing T-ball here. If he hits the ball in the wrong direction, is he going to start crying in front of the other kids? He's got to learn to choke up on the bat like Bobby Richardson and just go with the flow. That's what I was teaching him, Fred.
Well, he's a young man. Okay, sure thing, Curtis. Let's go quickly to Jesse from New York. You're on with Curtis and Ebony. Jesse.
Hey, how you doing? I'm going to raise my son like my father raised me. He just set a good example for me. And, you know, he's a hardworking man. I saw the way he treated my mother. So, I mean, he was a good guy, and that's how I'll raise my son. He never told me that I couldn't cry. I just saw the example that he put out there for me, you know. So, probably how I'll raise my son.
Jesse, did you see him crying in public?
No, I didn't see him crying in public. But, you know, he never told me I couldn't cry. I mean, if I was a little kid and I was crying about something trivial, he said, come on, son, you know, don't be a baby, that type of thing. But, you know, if I wanted cookies at 8 in the morning, that type of thing. And my mother would back him up, too. But, you know, as I grew up, you know, I never had him tell me, no, son, you can't cry. But at the same time, I looked at the example he set forth, and I tried to, you know.
Okay, but notice he did use the term, don't act like a baby.
Yeah, but, I mean, listen, if you're going to kick your feet on the floor when you want cookies at 8 in the morning, don't act like a baby. And my mother was there to back him up, too.
All right. So that's makes a balance. Sense to that's a
yeah.
balance.
And
approach.
I think that's gender neutral, by the way, too, Curtis. One time I lost a beauty pageant, and I started crying like a little snot-nosed brat.
That's expected.
Yeah. But you know what my mom said? Suck it up. You want to be in the big girl leagues? You got to be a big girl.
How old were you at that time?
Maybe 12.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. That was time to kind of, you know, start understanding winning and losing.
I would have let you cry all that makeup off, the mascara off. It would have been draining
Curtis.
Down your face, your painted face.
You're just so
sweet. You would have gotten
the
message because people would have looked at you and said, look, what's all that schmutz on your face?
No, you just
next
so
time,
sweet.
Don't cry, huh?
You're so sweet. So you set me up to look a hot mess. I see where you're going with that, Curtis. Up next, we're going to talk about when is the absolute worst time to propose. A doofus thought a good time to propose.
Any time is the worst time.
Well, says you, of course, Mr. 5-0. You like the Democratic Party, right? But up first, we've got headlines from Ken Duffy.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Here
Curtis, you know, this song reminds me of my wedding day.
So low budget.
It was. Don't be hating on Jagged Edge, man. You know, this is a special moment, you know.
It's this is like Boys to Men, right? It's like, yeah, I just want a wretch.
Yeah, you know, I know it's taking you back to those times, those four different occasions in which you promised forever to those special ladies.
Oh, and what a mistake that was.
Mrs. Sliwa.
What a mistake that was.
You know, I remember my wedding day as well, Curtis. And although the marriage didn't work out, it was a beautiful day. My mother dropped quite a dime on it. She's actually still pretty PO'd about it. Still sending me invoices to this day.
Now, well,
I swear. No, she's going to text me in 2 seconds and be like, she's still waiting for her money back.
Your mom wants her money back.
From a wedding that happened 6 years ago.
And did she realize it was a mistake at that time?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm sure we'll get an answer in about 30 seconds. She's going to text me, and she'll probably say yes.
And you see, that shows you how times have changed. Because if that guy that you were married was manly, he would have paid the full freight.
Ooh, my mom is going to love hearing that.
He would have paid the full freight. It would have been important for him, his family, whether he had to take a vig out in the street from organized crime, to pay the bill lock, stock, and barrel. That would have been the gentlemanly thing to do. But see, in your way, let's go Dutch.
No, well, his parents paid a third, my mom paid a third, and then we together paid a third.
So unfair.
Well, my mother feels the same. But listen, back to the wedding day. It's a beautiful day. Point is, you spend a lot of money, put a lot of time, and most people plan 6 months to a year for these things these days. So can you imagine, Curtis, this one woman, she has her wedding day finally. Everything's beautiful. Friends and family looking on. That's the one day for a woman, Curtis. The one day that it's all about you. Unapologetically all about you.
That's true. That's true. Because nobody's paying attention to the groom.
No, not paying attention to the groom, the flower girl, none of that crap.
In fact, if the groom didn't show up, nobody would pay attention. Now, if the bride doesn't show up, if it's a runaway bride, everything is chaotic.
No, it's all about the bride. Mm-hmm. And on this woman's wedding day, this poor woman, do you know that her groom's best man had the audacity to take that moment, mid-ceremony, no less, doesn't even wait for the reception, mid-ceremony, stop, hold the presses, drops to a knee, and proposes to his girlfriend?
In the middle of the ceremony?
In the middle of the ceremony, in the middle of the vows being exchanged, till death do you part, I do, drops to a knee, proposes, and announces that they're having a baby.
Now, when he dropped to his knee, did his huevos hit the floor? Because, boy, he's got big onions to do that.
Even Curtis knows better than to do that. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And so she took to the internet, this poor bride, you know, asking, did she have a right to be upset? And obviously, you know, you would think that a common sense would kick in at some point and say that's not when you do it. But I've heard of this, believe it or not, Curtis, before. Not mid-ceremony, but at the reception. That people think it's really cute at somebody else's wedding, on somebody else's day, to basically use up. Because, you know, the attitude is this. Well, all of our mutual friends are already gathered. It's already a captive audience. Ah, it's a two-for-one. You know, everybody's already dressed up and the photographer's there. So they take advantage and they make it about them.
What about this? Because I'm sure you went through this part of the ceremony. Okay, you've married. You've promised you're never going to leave this slacker, this deadbeat, this two-timer, whatever, until death do you part. Okay, you both agree. You both kiss. And then all of a sudden, you move off with your bridesmaids, and you have your nice little bouquet of, you know, 1-800 flowers, and you toss
it. Now, that's low budget.
Right, and you toss it over your back, right, and you're not looking, and then the bridesmaids are, like, fighting for the bouquet because it's going to mean they're probably the next to get married. And at that point, if all of a sudden the guy were to jump out of the crowd, the boyfriend of the bridesmaid, and say, your dream has come true because, look, I've got the ring. Will you be my wife? Now, what about that? That's nice synergy, right?
No. On somebody else's wedding day, Curtis, it's no go.
Well, let's find out if, in fact, that is just the lowest of the low of what somebody could do at somebody else's wedding that they were a participant with, right?
Yeah, and this was the best man, no less. So he's up there at the front, Curtis, with everybody else, drops to a knee and proposes to his woman in the audience. Just totally upstaging this bride on her day.
Maybe he got caught up in the moment. You know, maybe for years.
Oh, well, you pick a better moment, brother.
He had been a little slow on the move, you know, and then all of a sudden he was inspired by the ceremony. He had never before, right, wanted to make that final proposal, you know, and he didn't want to be rejected, but he decided this is the opportunity to do it here. And I want to do it in front of an audience because I wanted to go on record that when she said no to me, at least I made the proper kind of appeal.
That sounds like a trash argument, Curtis. By the way, quick update from Mama Williams. Yes, I do need all of my money. I'm glad you brought this up. Also glad you got a new job, and I want it all on your first check. So there you go.
And I agree. I agree.
You're ridiculous.
She should never have had to have paid a third. It should have been on the guy. It should have been on the guy's family. Now, if your mother down in Louisiana wanted to give in some cattle, some chickens.
A dowry?
Right, some
a dowry?
Roosters. You know,
okay.
I can understand. That's old school. Okay. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And that also leads us into the discussion of other people who've had marriages. And what has gone wrong within the midst of that marriage?
Sure.
Based on what other people did. And now, maybe it was part of your wedding entourage. Maybe it was the bridesmaids. Maybe it was the groom's guys. Or maybe it was just family members or friends who just did something either during the ceremony or in the midst of the reception afterwards that was just like totally off the hook.
Just a hot. Yeah, I remember my best friend got married. I was her maid of honor. And there was a woman in her bridal party that was soliciting other, her and her husband were kind of open marriage, and they were soliciting other couples after she had a few brewskis in her, soliciting other couples to swing, go swinging with them.
Wait a second. They're getting married.
Mm-hmm.
They've just tied the knot, and they're now working the crown.
No, Curtis, one of the other bridesmaids.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
So this woman's been married for a few years, and that's the lifestyle her and her husband live,
right.
No problem. And she thought it was a really good time at somebody else's brand new wedding in their marriage to ask other couples if they'd like to participate in the, bumping and grinding.
Well, I remember it was at the time of, I think it was my third wedding. Been so many.
Lost count. I know. It's hard. It's hard being Curtis.
Four men in the audience that I had known in the prior years to my wedding. Who were prepared to get up when the judge was announcing to the crowd, is there any reason that anyone knows of that these two should not be joined in matrimony?
Why would they say you shouldn't be joined in matrimony?
Because they were going to say, this guy, it's not going to last. This guy will not be able to hold down a marriage. He'll probably, in fact, if you were to ask him right now, is it a mistake, Curtis? He'll probably say yes. And they would have been right. I wish they
terrible.
Had done an intervention.
That is terrible.
That would have saved me so much aggravation, so much time in divorce court,
family court.
If only these guys who claim to be my friends would have done an intervention. I have a reason, Judge. I know a reason why Curtis Lewa should not be tying the knot.
Well, I agree with that. And you know what really makes me mad, Curtis, is everybody wants to tell you after the fact. All of my friends, the women that stood up there at the chapel beside me after was, oh, I knew it wasn't going to work. Oh, really? Well, I wish you would have said something about a year ago, 6 months ago, the night before the wedding. That would have been helpful. Why don't people do that? If you know your friend is going into a marriage that you already know it's not going to work, just tell them. Don't wait for later.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. It's the brand new Curtis and Ebony Show. It's your place to be every Monday through Friday, 12 to 3. And all we need you to do is spread the word.
Bring the noise!
Studio View. MWABCRadio.com.
In the spirit of trying to connect.
A great way to see an angel and a beauty.
There's no doubt.
Take a listen. Take a peek.
Turn it up!
Curtis and Ebony. 77 WABC.
And we're back to the Curtis and Ebony Show. We're going straight to the phones with Larry from Scotch Plains. You're on Live and Local.
Curtis and Ebony, thank you for letting me on. Videographers and photographers at weddings see the most unusual situations, and I got two great ones. After the dancing was done and the wedding was over, the bride's father couldn't find the money in his pocket to pay for the wedding, so we rewound the tape, and it turned out that the groom's father pickpocketed the bride's father and took the money.
Oh, man.
What?
That was one instance. And then there was an annulment immediately after.
Now I can imagine why.
And then another story is I was at a high-end wedding doing a video of the wedding, and the bride's mother passed out on the floor, and they called EMS. Then once CMS was taken away, they started dancing again like nothing happened.
But they paid all that money for that open bar, so they had to keep the party going.
All that great food, I can't go to waste, but they were carrying her out, and then the bride and groom were dancing. Everybody just...
Oh, wait, the bride stayed again. Too, and it's her mom? Oh
yeah,
that's terrible.
Amazing. So those are true stories, and videographers and photographers have seen it all.
Yeah, I can imagine. The mom takes a fainting spell.
That's terrible.
And the daughter says, "Don't worry,
they got her.
She'll be okay.
Yeah,
you're not gonna ruin my night."
Yeah,
daughter says she does it all the time.
Oh my gosh, That's terrible.
Anyway, I'm not gonna ruin your night because, as you know, Ebony K. Williams does double duty. She's the hostess on the Specialist program tonight. If you haven't seen it, do so. 5 o'clock, the Fox News Channel. And what are the topics you're gonna be talking about? I hope you're gonna be talking about how the president did the rope-a-dope when he claimed, "You better hope, Comey, that there are no tapes of our conversations," because apparently he had to come clean today and acknowledge, "Well, I didn't tape any of them."
President Trump doing a rope-a-dope? No way, Curtis. Yeah, you know, we're definitely talking about Comey tapes or the lack thereof. I was actually super sad to hear that. I was looking forward to a good Comey tape, me myself. But we're talking that. We're talking about the reaction to, of course, the health care bill. And we're talking about Nancy Pelosi. Because Trump also tweeted about her. She's good for the GOP. Keep her in place. So we're talking about whether or not she stays or whether or not she goes. That's on the Fox News Specialist tonight, 5 to 6.
And what will you be styling and profiling?
Oh, you got to tune in to see what color. I'm going to wear your favorite color. That's a hint.
No. It better not be red.
I'm wearing your favorite color.
It better not be red.
An honorary shout out to Curtis Lewa.
Oofa.
Oh, yeah, baby.